Attention first responders, ready for a new challenge? You can turn your leadership skills into deliciousness by becoming a Firehouse Subs restaurant owner. First responders will receive a $100,000 cash incentive to help open their restaurant. Continue serving after service. Visit firehousesubsfranchising.com today.
Breathing in diesel exhaust fumes is like walking into a fire without a mask. Over time, those toxins lead to cancer. Protect yourself with MagnaGrip, the easiest, most reliable exhaust removal system that features a true 100% seal to eliminate diesel exhaust fumes. To get free grant assistance, visit MagnaGrip.com.
Welcome to Tailboard Talk
with Chris Rasmussen,
Craig Nelson, and Jeff Wallen. Every month we explore different topics of interest to you, our cohorts in fire and emergency services. So whether you sit back and listen, sound off on the message board, or call in live to be part of the conversation, we welcome you to join us in our mission to improve the fire service for those we serve and those we serve beside. Now coming to you live from the Great White North, this is Tailboard Talk on Fire Engineering Talk Radio.
Hey, welcome to Tailboard Talk for Friday, October 18th. This is Jeff.
This is Craig.
And Chris.
Yeah. And it's dry and it's warm, even though it's fall here in the Great White North, anticipating the whiteness that is yet to come.
Yeah, I mean, it's been an unusual year. I'm guessing across the whole country, but a lot of rains in the beginning of the year, and now hasn't rained for a month and a half or so.
Yeah, been very low precipitation, and the current weather pattern has storms chasing up the East Coast in succession of each other and acts like a block on our weather pattern. So
right.
Everything stays dry the way that it is right now.
I'm sure they'd be willing to share some moisture with us.
I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Right now.
Have any to spare?
Right. So yeah, it's not your typical October around here. It's 80 degrees. We're going to be 80 degrees, 70s, 80s. And
for mid-October, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yep. Crazy. Does mean that every beet truck that goes by and yeah. Every grain hauler puts up a cloud of dust that lasts for about 5 minutes.
Right. If we can just keep this going until February,
March. Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be perfect.
So how you guys been? Everybody been good?
Yeah.
You don't want to talk about personal stuff at all?
Oh, you know, I've got personal problems. Have my whole life. I'm struggling with those. I know.
All right.
It's okay to seek help. It's not a weakness. It's not a sign of weakness. So that's good.
We'll be the judge of that.
I didn't need help. I didn't think, but turns out I do. No, I think of this time of year, and I remember early in my career, you'd get kind of to October, November, and it was year end, and a lot of the crew objectives were done for the year, inspections, hydrants, training hours, right. A lot of that. You might have a little bit left, but it was like a little bit slower pace that you always looked forward to. And I reflect on that now because it's kind of changed. We're in full swing. We're doing live burn training last week, this week with our neighboring departments. And that's been going very well, but it's just kind of crazy how years ago, we wouldn't be doing that kind of stuff this time of year. It'd have been kind of, okay, we got everything done. We're good. We're easing in, but there's just more and more stuff we do every year. So now the year is pretty packed all the way around.
Yeah, it is full. We're opening up a new fire station, so we're hustling on those things, trying to get an academy done.
Yeah, we have
get those crews and people assigned, and every time you turn around, there's those target solutions things pop up all the time. Try to weasel that in sometime in between buying recliners and beds for stations trying to get the shift straight. We've had some shift transfers, you know, at the beginning of the year here to even things out. So trying to make everybody happy. So yeah, I used to also enjoy October, November, December football season, right? Got to watch a little football and
still look forward to that lull around Thanksgiving and between Christmas and New Year's. Are they still mostly there?
I don't think so.
Oh, dang it.
I don't think so.
It's kind of funny. Yeah. Cause and part of it is we do our EMT research earlier. Now we always used to wait until the month they were due. And it turns out if anything goes wrong, that's really not a good way to do it. So now we do them. We try to have them all done by December 31st each year. So we have some months cushion there. Mm-hmm. If there's an issue, right. If somebody needs hours, whatever it may be, we've got time to fix it without it being panic mode. But I was just, again, looking at the schedule, like you said, we have a recruit class that's been in full bore for the last few months, and they'll be graduating here in a few weeks. We have our annual facilities training hours that's part of the live burn stuff, and our mutual aid partners training together, same thing. But to the point where we're running out of training captains. I ended up out on the training ground today.
Because you came out of the office?
Yeah.
guest appearance?
Did the light burn your skin?
Someone got hired or fired? What happened there?
I just let you guys run through your stuff. let it roll off.
Chief to chief, you know.
You got 1,000 donut jokes, but you're not a cop.
So yeah.
Let it go with that.
But yeah, to the point where we're still that busy in October. That's kind of what hit me is, yeah. And then we've got enhanced EMS skills this week and next week. And it just.
On top of that, Greg and I sat through some interviews in the last week
for
the next recruit class that starts in February, January.
Yeah.
I don't remember now.
So the old days where we do one class or two a year, and now it's just constant.
We're getting, it just keeps rolling.
Anybody from big departments listening to this is going, whatever.
We shut a fire station down.
We've been doing this for years.
Shut a station down because we're remodeling it.
Yeah.
Actually, so that, we had to do some reorganization there. Not shutting it. We closed it while it's being remodeled, but it's going to be remodeled for a year.
So talking about Station 5?
Station 5, yeah.
So did you end up going with that shared housing plan you were talking about to the west?
Yeah, I don't even want to talk about it. A lot of shared housing plans going on. There's a lot more people around the station I'm at right now. I'm not sure I like it. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. We had to move some apparatus to other stations and to cover areas and things like that. So, a lot of big changes have gone on. And like I say, it's usually not relaxation, but maybe time to, our stuff is all done for the year. Maybe we can work on new projects. Those things just aren't even in the conversation.
No, no.
Got an accreditation coming up in April. So we're pretty loaded.
Did any of your crews head west of Station 5?
West, we did not.
Did not. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Nice try.
Yeah.
No, we did not share.
I know a lot of different plans were being kicked around.
We had a lot of different plans, and then they all fell some of them fell through at the last minute. We had a housing area that we're going to put them in that area, and those things changed. So crews have accepted it, I think accepted it pretty well, and just kind of rolling, working out the bugs a little bit, and hopefully that new station or the Station 5 remodel or rebuild, I should say, stays on track and we get people back in that area soon. So it's one of our busiest areas, so that causes us some problems.
Yeah, it does. When you take that crew out of that area, you have to be responding from other places in creative ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So what, that's the highlight of the Midwest.
Speaking about having to change things up, not that it's a timely topic or anything, but we were, kind of watching what's going on the East Coast right now with hurricane season and a pretty impactful one at the moment in between two storms while we're recording this. And it got us to thinking about some of the disaster responses we've had in our local area in the past. And maybe talking about some of the things that came up that departments that might have never experienced this or might experience it, once every 100 years might not consider. We thought we'd roll through some of the things that that impacted us and some changes we had to make when we were going through some of our local flooding issues.
Right. And I think every department out there has emergency plans, that get looked at every couple of years, obviously, but when it comes time to actually put them in action, get changed on the fly quickly, for the best words, I guess I can.
Well, I think sometimes they're just easy to shelve or put it on the back shelf and forget about because you go, that'll never happen. What are the odds that happens? And now after we've been through COVID and we're talking about some of the flooding we've had issues with in the past, you start to go, well, these 100-year events are now occurring a lot more than every 100 years. Maybe we need to front shelf some of these. lands.
Well, we had, in our area, we had the 100-year flood, and then we had the 500-year flood, all within a decade. Not within 500 years.
Right.
It was within a decade. So it caused us a lot of issues. Earlier in the show, we talked about all the things that we do for the year, Target Solutions and all these accreditations and all these other things that we have to do. They get put on the back burner during a natural disaster situation. You know, up in the Midwest, we deal with maybe smaller versions of wildland fires to the west of us. We deal with flooding, which is a big thing. Blizzards. We do have blizzards mm-hmm. that can shut us down for a day or two before we get declared out of those things. Obviously, tornadoes, larger events, train derailments, those kind of things can change your department in a hurry and change the direction you're going or delay the direction you're going. Everyone's busy getting out there. But the biggest thing that I've kind of learned about these things is, it's not only that this disaster has happened, but it also is... It impacts us all, and it impacts us all in different ways. So you have firefighters, we have 140 some firefighters on our department, but they have houses and stuff that are involved in the affected areas. Mm-hmm. So, family, we always talk about family, and now we're saying get to work. It's difficult. So you have to, as an organization, have to start looking at how you're going to deploy people. What can we do to help these people on top of helping the rest of the people?
And so it's one of those where we're not experts on hurricanes, which are part of the problems that are happening now. There are wildfires out west. Actually, Western North Dakota has some pretty big wildfires going right now. So there are a lot of crews out there working on those. But there's some similarities in what they do to your staffing, your scheduling. A lot of those things mm-hmm. kind of puts them in a hyperdrive.
Right. It's not even, we have not been approached that I'm aware of to head east, southeast. But we were approached to head west for some fires. So that, that could drop your staffing down pretty quick if you send a crew or two out. A couple of years ago, we were out, Fargo Fire was out in Oregon, helping them out a little bit. So that took a crew, four or five people out of rotation for a good week or so. Or longer than that, even.
Yeah.
So, it's those kind of things. It, even though it's happening down in those areas and not happening in us currently, we are affected. Also, we want to send people down there to help the best we can.
So when you guys in Fargo were experiencing the flooding, did you see any of the missions you were responsible for change during the flood events? So did you start providing services you wouldn't normally have been providing, which then impacted your day-to-day calls and staffing and so forth?
So, a lot of things, Jeff. a lot of things changed, on the fly, and you just got phone calls sometimes and you had to go take care of things. But yeah, day-to-day, we don't throw sandbags. We started throwing sandbags and you got to throw it to get them 3 feet high. And then 2 days later, we have to get them all 5 feet high. And then it's, even just in the process, it seems like our city counts on the fire department to be involved in a lot of these things. It's because we have the organizational skills mm-hmm. and the manpower, obviously, to help organize things, get things set up, get things moved out to the areas that need to be moved out, and then get them deployed how they can. So that was, obviously one of the biggest things was assisting with sandbag dikes, things like that. A few rescues, not a lot, mm-hmm. but.
Were you doing the sandbagging with on-duty crews or off-duty
yep.
personnel?
Both, everybody we could possibly get, funding was there, so they would pay to have crews. I remember a few floods that we did work 36-hour shifts and have 12 hours off.
That's the biggest stuff I remember. Mm-hmm. Is it puts, like I said a few minutes ago, it puts you in hyperdrive. So your normal job, your normal schedule go out the window, and now a lot more is being asked of you and a lot longer hours. So I remember sandbagging through the night on the edge of the river literally feet away, and we're building a dike and it had to go cover a certain distance. It was a long, long ways. And I remember as the sun's going down, you're putting bags down. And I remember as the sun came up, we were still putting bags down. Right. You're tired, you're cold, you're hungry, and you make do, but that's a little bit of what we all signed up for. It's just, I remember some of those things very vividly because they were so dramatic. And then it was, when we did get relieved, it was you go back and you're going to cover another station and you're still responding to calls.
Yeah.
You're going to try and get what rest you can, but then you were also working on other things, getting ready for your next shift on the line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And those are important. So taking care of your employees is extremely important. You know, you have all these fancy plans that have, well, we're going to get lumber from this lumber yard. Well, that lumber yard's empty. What are you going to do? You know, so you start operating, obviously, in this incident. And I know they have EOCs down on these large incidences. And then people trying to get equipment for them and doing everything they need. And it's difficult because the crews are out there busting their butts and they need something. And you got to get it to them ASAP. So,
well, and it's kind of funny. We use this NIMS ICS system with finance, logistics, operations, and planning. Yeah, and we end up 90-some% of the time in operations, but all of a sudden an event like this hits, and all of a sudden planning and logistics become the most important things. I remember one of the things, I remember just being hungry.
Right.
Like you wanted food, and they did get food to us, but it wasn't as much as you wanted, and it wasn't as frequently. It was a lot of hours in between, and so you're burning calories doing that stuff. Kind of important things for those running events to be on top of, because it's real easy when you're in command, and I'm in one of those roles now where it's easy for me to go, well, I'm good. Well,
yeah.
No, I need to be thinking about what are they going through out on the line and making sure they have food and they have water and coffee and those simple things that can help them do their job and keep going.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And I am also one of those positions in admin, but you also, you know, you have to remember, sitting in my air conditioned vehicle is a lot different than being outside in the different temperatures, weather, those kind of things. So you have to, you know, make sure you're out there with them, out there talking to them and giving them whatever they need. If they need warmer jackets or tank tops, you find it for them and you get those things done. So yeah, it's, they're devastating events and they can take a long time for cities and communities to build back up. Fire will be part of that also, you know, so that's important to keep an eye on. And I hate looking at airplane disaster plans or flood mitigation plans. They're boring because nothing's happening, you know, until you actually need them. So,
mm-hmm. Go ahead, Jeff.
When we were talking about the scheduling, one thing I wish we would have jumped on sooner on our side of the river was modifying our shift schedule. We waited till there was no possible way to continue with things the way that we were. And it would have helped everybody if we had made the decision to change from our normal staffing schedule when we were getting too resource heavy and too many demands out front right away, because we struggled on for another couple of days trying to keep that schedule in place and realized that for us, we chose to drop down to two shifts, 24 on, 24 off. And there were some people that were working out in the neighborhoods on the lines that we didn't even bring back into work because they were in some key positions working with other departments and stuff. And we're really needed out there, because then by the time we had switched, it took us several days to start getting people recovered from the fact that they were pulling those multiple day shifts. And we were realizing that we were having to pull people off shift to do the jobs they were doing the day before, and we didn't have plans for anybody backfilling and that kind of stuff. And so we started getting outside resources into responding to the calls, and it sounds like, great, we got resources coming in, we got such and such department from however many miles away that's going to take this 24-hour shift at this station, we're good to go. And then realize they've got no way to talk to dispatch.
Right.
We have some portables in the trucks and stuff, but they also don't know where they're going.
Right.
They don't know what we've got keys to and what we don't have keys to from our lockbox systems. And so we ended up just embedding one local person. We took our crews because we thought, we'll do a shift. We can have outsiders doing the other shift. And then we realized we needed to redistribute our people again and just have one person from Moorhead fired each station on each shift.
To be with the other,
To be with the other crews. And we didn't staff any of our own shifts then. They were all done by outside people with somebody embedded. So that way things went smoother. And then we had radio communication issues as well, too, until the military showed up with a big, huge trailer to be able to set up a whole new armor module locally and a VHF module at the time to be able to integrate the people that were talking on two systems and set up some ad hoc radio communications on the scene.
Those are good points. You know, fire service is always willing to help out, and guys will always, I'll go down to Florida and help out if I can, if they're needed, but I don't know Florida. I don't know everything that comes with Florida. You know what I mean? If it's rules and laws and all the way down to lockbox keys, I don't know that. I don't know directions. You know, I've got the beaches kind of covered. I've kind of figured that out. Maybe that Mickey Mouse place, I got that kind of been there a couple of times, but Key West. Other than that, that was for solely recreation. Was that nothing to do with work? You know, how would you, you know, without having someone local with you?
Yeah.
You know, it would be almost impossible.
Yeah. And occasions for hurricanes and tornadoes and stuff. A lot of the landmarks you might expect to be able to use for navigation might not be there.
Right.
And that makes makes it even more challenging. Assuming cell phone coverage stays up, assuming GPSs are still active. I mean, if we were in that same situation today, we'd probably be relying on a lot of consumer technologies to help us when the systems we have set up for us aren't working or aren't available to other people, and have to be prepared how to work with those too.
Oh, absolutely. And then integrating, you know, obviously with state resources, regional, federal resources that are coming in, how do you do that? And that's, they're in the same boat as we are. They're going to Florida, never been to Florida. They're just there to try to help as much as possible. So, and then organizing that large mess, right? Because you're hearing natural disasters and people want to help, so they just show up, and that doesn't always help. If you can grab them and get them into a controlled area and give them an assignment, they're great. But when they just want to freelance, it's a little difficult too.
For us, when we had resource needs during the big flood, it seemed like what was most effective for us was our people interfacing with local business owners and contractors and stuff who knew a lot about where the local resources were, because anything coming from the state was 2 days out.
Right.
So I need this today. Great. You'll have it in 2 days. We can put it in order. We'll have all that stuff you need shipped in within 2 days when we don't need it anymore.
Right.
The needs over.
And I'm sure there's conflicting interest, right? Even just in our, metropolitan. You have a two cities that are right next to each other, separated by a river, separated by a state. Everyone's screaming for resources.
And I think that's maybe a good lesson for all of us. One that we tend to shy away from is planning for this stuff further out and pulling the trigger for further out. Yeah. So like you said, it takes 2 days to get it. Well, yeah, we don't know what it's going to do in 2 days, but we have a pretty darn good idea. Right. But I think even as a society, maybe as a fire service, we tend to try to think positive on it. Well, you know, it's probably won't get too much worse. Right. Let's plan for it. Let's have the resources there, because we can always send them back.
Right.
And so I think that's one of those things that I know myself personally, I could improve on is, nope, you got to pull the trigger sooner, so you have that stuff there. When you wait, it causes issues.
Yeah. And then I mean, resources are hard to get sometimes, and you have dueling resources. And I will use the current example right now. There's power companies that I know, power companies from this area headed to the southeast pre-hurricane. Yeah. Well, now we have a natural disaster in the western North Dakota that we need power companies there, but they're gone.
Yeah, you know? Competing resources.
Right.
You're competing for them. The first person to call is generally the one that's going to come out the best. Yeah.
I don't want to say highest bidder. I would hate to have that pop up, but I'm sure it does once in a while.
Yeah. One thing we were really successful with, and it was working with public health, identifying the vulnerable populations here. And since we had time to plan for the flooding event, moving them out before resources became too scarce to be able to do that. Oh. And that took people that we would have been spending a lot of time servicing. If we're now having streets that are being cut off, if utilities are being impacted by this, that they were taken out of the equation by being brought somewhere else safe. And I don't know how realistic that can be with hurricanes, but there's probably something there. And there's when you're talking about wildfires, and you can see where it might be going, trying to stay ahead of that to get the folks who are going to need so many resources if they do get in trouble, just getting them out of the picture early. Right. And we utilized out of the local area resources to help move them too. So that way, as people are being moved, those resources may or may not be coming back to the area. When their mission's done, they may be headed back home again, so that we can still take care of our local calls. And that was really effective.
Yeah. And I, like you said, we're not hurricane experts and have spent very little time in the Southeast. But the Hurricane Helene came through. Mm-hmm. And obviously the crews and people started getting to work immediately. Now you have another one right on its, you know,
when I look
heels
at
and how does that work, you know, and
the evacuation part of it, because we just heard it on the news today. They're talking about with this next one coming in, evacuating ahead of this thing, because it's much easier to get people out now. And that's kind of a little bit what you're talking about, Jeff, is the resources that it requires. And I'm no expert on evacuation. We've done a little bit of it, like Jeff said, with the flood. Yeah. But it's also up here, similar to blizzards. Get people home before the blizzard hits, because once the blizzard hits, once the flood hits, if we need to evacuate them after, it takes a lot more of our resources and it takes them a lot longer to do it. Right. And it's similar to a blizzard. If we have to send people out into a blizzard, now we're putting our people at risk too. Right. And it's going to take longer. It's harder. It takes more personnel. So you take a resource short situation and now you need even more resources. You make it worse. So those pre-evacuations are so critical, so important. I wish I knew more about it. It might be a good topic for us to have somebody that's done some of that or had experience with it on a future show to talk about kind of the pros and cons, what worked, what didn't work, techniques. How do you get people to leave their homes? Because it's not easy. And I get it. We all have homes.
Right.
You don't want to leave your home. You want to take care of it. You want to try and protect it.
The interstate's a lot better before the event than after the event.
Yeah.
You know, if it's still there.
And for us with blizzards, we're also pre-positioning personnel ahead of time as well, too. So we'll be bringing people in knowing that they're not coming in the blizzard. If they've got a shift tomorrow and the blizzard's hitting tonight, we need to call those people in early. But we need to work with them and families as they have individual needs, too, because some families don't have strong support networks. Some do. And some are able to double up with other family members before the storm hits, too. So that way the firefighter can be at work, not worried about the family because his family is, you know, with the in-laws or with his folks, so that they've got a support network while the firefighter's away for a couple of days. Cause he's getting in or out.
It's tough. Hits. You know, my personal house has not been affected by any natural disasters, knock on wood, but, every time I leave my wife there and my kids are older now, so they're gone, but they were there. My 99-year-old father-in-law lives next door, kind of leaving them hanging and hoping nothing happens, you know? So it's important to, you know, remember that with the folks and if they need to get away and back to check on them or, you know, that's something we need to let them do too.
Well, and that's the advice I'd give to anybody that's listening, especially those younger in your career, is to take that planning part more seriously. We talk to all of our new personnel about that. Mm-hmm. We tell them to do that. I was told to do that. I never really did a whole lot with it.
I'll deal with that later.
Yeah. We had a pretty good support network of family where my wife could pick up with the kids and leave if she needed to. So I didn't worry too much about it, but I really should have taken that more seriously and planned a little bit better. So that would be my strong advice to any of you is this stuff happens. It happens quickly, even when you see it coming. So whether it's a hurricane a few days out, or in our case, a flood that was days or weeks out and just kept getting worse and worse, have that plan in place before those things start, because once they start, you get busier.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've been, you know, kind of seasoning in a little bit about hurricanes while we've been having the discussion. We don't normally do this, but I would like to point out that we're recording this episode on Monday, October 7th to be edited and ready to post, a week and a half from now too, when another hurricane will have made it through the area. And it could be a little confusing. Why are they making so light of it? Or why are they not talking about this aspect or that aspect? This is before that event has occurred. Right. In case anything we're talking about is impacted by that.
Oh, absolutely. That's a problem with the show. But obviously we're just generally talking about natural disasters in your area.
Yeah.
And it could be, you know, obviously that area, or it could be other areas in the country. But just kind of the biggest thing is to start making sure your plans are up to date. And by no means are we bashing anybody. I would not want to be in their shoes right now down there. They're working their butts off and they're doing a great job. But get your plans organized, you know, review your plans, even if you're in Fargo, North Dakota, where we don't have a lot of natural disasters, check them out, make sure you're keeping an eye on them, checking your resources, making sure. I know the last plan I had, they had a chief, fire chief in there that hasn't been chief for 10 years was listed in the plan. It's like, oh, that didn't work out. We haven't been looking at that one.
Did you call that chief back?
Yeah, I called him. So, you know, those kind of things, all I can do is recommend to take care of your people during this process. Make sure you're giving them everything they need out there to help. Obviously looking out for your community the best you can. Work with other, work closely with other agencies that have help available. You might have to hold their hand through some things, but they come with resources, much needed resources, hopefully.
But the biggest thing I would say is plan ahead. Yeah. We've got the time. Right now there are some, they're recovering from the first hurricane and now the next one is coming down the pipeline. If you're not in that situation right now, if you're a line firefighter, you're in operations, you should be planning for this. What happens when you get thrown into this? So we just talked about your family, your house. Do you have plans to be able to leave it on short notice and go to work? And where are they going to go? What are they going to do? But also for yourself with whatever ICS system you use, whether it's NIMS ICS or it's Blue Card or whatever you use, that you're comfortable and you understand the terminology, because when these things happen, you're not just working with your own agency. You will be working with many other agencies, and it won't just be at a local level. It'll be a local, county, state, and federal levels. And you need to be able to function up or down that pathway with ICS. And so if you don't understand it now, now is the time to study. Now is the time to ask questions and learn it so you're comfortable and you're familiar with it. Because when the disaster hits, that's not the time to learn it.
And then also for the people who have been around a while, just realize that we have staff turnover. So even if you are good or have had experience in the past, that doesn't mean your whole organization is prepared anymore like they used to be if you've had staff. So retraining, revisiting the policies, doing new tabletop exercises with new people in the mix, and to be able to hear some of the experiences from people who have been through these things before and to understand the idea that that you can be much more effective if you know your family is taken care of. And if we're prepared to be out of communication with them for 12 hours, 24 hours, 36 hours, that they can't reach you, you can't reach them because of the things that we're doing. Right. And we've made steps to make sure they're going to be safe so that your head can be in the game back at work. Or we're making plans around those people who can, those people who need other support networks that don't normally have them.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it was just a quick chat about preparedness and we can, obviously discuss response later, if we hear some stuff. And I know everyone down there is doing a great job, and it's a very large affected area. I mean, all the way up the East Coast is being affected. So,
and our thoughts are with them. Yep. We're thinking about you. Wish the best for all of you down there. There's some, those storms are pretty wicked from what we're seeing.
Absolutely.
And again, plan ahead. If you are not involved in something like that right now, now is the time to plan for an event operationally, communication-wise, at home, all of that stuff.
Very good. Yeah. Plan ahead. Cover your folks. Watch each other's backs. Take care of your families. And be safe out there.
Absolutely. Have a good one.
Good night.
Attention, first responders. Ready for a new challenge? You can turn your leadership skills into deliciousness by becoming a Firehouse Subs restaurant owner. First responders will receive a $100,000 cash incentive to help open their restaurant. Continue serving after service. Visit FirehouseSubsFranchising.com today.
Breathing in diesel exhaust fumes is like walking into a fire without a mask. Over time, those toxins lead to cancer. Protect yourself with MagnaGrip, the easiest, most reliable exhaust removal system that features a true 100% seal to eliminate diesel exhaust fumes. To get free grant assistance, visit MagnaGrip.com.